Chapter 24. I Actually Become a Senator. In addition to calling people for money, traveling to raise money, and complaining about how much money I had to raise, I spent some time during the election contest looking for a chief of staff. Stephanie Shriok asked a friend named Drew Lipman, who had been Barbara Boxer's chief of staff, to help me find someone suitable. Drew introduced me to a number of very impressive candidates, but none was as impressive as Drew himself. Eventually, I pulled a reverse Cheney and just offered him the job. Dick Cheney was the head of the search team that, after an exhaustive search, chose Dick Cheney as George W. Bush's running mate. One of the first and smartest things Drew did was to set up a meeting with Tamara Lozado, who had been Hillary Clinton's chief of staff when Hillary served in the Senate. It had occurred to Drew that I might be facing some challenges similar to those that Hillary had faced. Republicans might be particularly wary of me, considering that I had spent so much time heaping scorn and ridicule upon them. While Democrats might be concerned that, as something of a celebrity, I might steal some of their camera time. Hillary had navigated those challenges with notable success, not just earning the respect of her colleagues on both sides of the aisle, but getting a whole lot done for the people of her state. Wow, I thought, she should be president someday. So we sat down with Tamara, who spelled out the Hillary model. Simply put, it's be a workhorse, not a show horse. Go to all your hearings. Come early, stay late. Do your homework. Don't do national press. Be accessible to your state media and to your constituents. That sounded smart to me. I'd be available to Minnesota press and Minnesota constituents. I'd be knowledgeable about Minnesota issues. I'd be Minnesota senator and nobody else's. I finally actually became Minnesota senator on July 7th, 2009. Normally, there are 33 or 34 senators being sworn in on the same day, the first day of the new Congress that is convened in January. Because there are so many, each one only gets three or four tickets for family and friends to sit in the gallery, where they can watch the new or reelected senators take the oath of office from the vice president three at a time. In my case, though, waiting 6 months really paid off, because I was the only senator being sworn in that day. The entire Senate gallery was filled with my friends, my family, my supporters, and, of course, my lawyers, who, in a touching nod to the historic moment, had agreed not to bill me for the 1.3 hours they would spend in the Capitol that day. Many of my new colleagues did me the honor of showing up on the floor for the occasion. Looking around, I saw a lot of my Democratic friends, of course, but also a good number of Republicans who used the occasion to attach a rider to my swearing-in that would defund Planned Parenthood. Who says Republicans don't have a sense of humor? My friend, Vice President Walter Mondale, had flown in from Minnesota. He and Senator Klobuchar walked me down the aisle to take the oath of office on Paul Wellstone's family Bible. As soon as I finished, the gallery erupted in sustained applause. I looked up and blew a little kiss to Franny and the kids, then scanned the rows to see all my friends and supporters. Even Mrs. Moline was there, grinning from ear to ear and clapping madly for her fourth-grade student. Pretty much everyone who'd been a key player in my election was there cheering for me, with the exception, I suppose, of Norm Coleman. My new colleagues stopped to offer congratulations. I was especially gratified that so many Republicans turned out. Orrin Hatch, Richard Lugar, Sam Brownback, and even Minority Leader Mitch McConnell himself. And whether it was out of respect for the institution or simply an acknowledgement of the ordeal I'd been through, their congratulations were sincere and heartfelt. I took it as a hopeful sign. I even engaged in some friendly banter with arch-conservative Jim DeMint. "How are things on the far left?" he asked me cheerily. "They're great," I responded. "How are things on the nutcase right?" We both laughed and went on to build a cordial relationship based entirely on giving each other crap. That afternoon, I got on the Senate subway, the Disneyland-style tram that runs between the Capitol and the Senate office buildings, and happened to sit across from Chuck Grassley, another old-school Republican. You look just like you look on TV, he greeted me. Well, there's a reason for that, I replied, but actually, people say I'm shorter than I look on TV. Yeah, Chuck said with his distinct Midwestern twang. Guess what they say about me? That you're taller than you look on TV. Yeah, how'd you know that? Well, you're taller than you look on TV. Yeah, well, guess what else they say about me? That you're friendlier than you seem on TV. Yeah, how'd you know that? Because you're friendlier than you seem on TV. This was becoming a real meet cute. You know, I said, taking a chance, it wouldn't hurt to smile every once in a while. Well, Chuck said dubiously, normally what I'm talking about is pretty serious. Well, you could smile at the beginning, then talk about the serious stuff, then smile again at the end. Oh, yeah, Chuck grinned. That's a good idea. I was already making friends, and in fact, Chuck would go on to co-sponsor more of my legislation than any of my other Republican colleagues. Later that day, I cast my first vote, for which I was strongly rebuked by John McCain, widely considered one of the Senate's strongest rebukers, because it had been a vote to defeat an amendment of his that would have stripped anti-terrorist funding for commercial bus lines. But hey, it was a start.